a man who I just honor and treasure, who's just fantastic. Ricky Kej is an internationally renowned Indian music composer. He's a wonderfully dedicated environmentalist. He's a professor, and he composed and produced the Shanti Samsari, and it led you to open doors and work with leaders at the United Nations. And you just recently played at the United Nations Geneva Assembly. And you also, of course, got your Grammy for that beautiful, beautiful CD you did. And I've had a chance to work with you and know you for years. But I know you've gathered and worked with a lot of wonderful Indian people dedicated to trying to change this terrible situation we have with the environment. So welcome. Where are you in the world? Are you in Bangalore right now?
Yes, Cindy. I'm in Bangalore right now.
What time is it in Bangalore?
It's 4:45 a.m., 4:45 in the morning.
Oh, well, there you are. So I don't know where to start except this passion that you've got for the environment. And you did just recently play in Geneva. Tell me about that experience.
Thank you so much for having me on this show. And yeah, it was an incredible experience playing at the UN United Nations headquarters in Geneva. And, you know, and actually standing there and performing on that same stage where, you know, almost every world leader has stood and, you know, and all major treaties have been signed over there. So it was an incredible experience playing my music on environmental consciousness within those walls. Very, very surreal.
Well, you had a large, large group of people as well that you were working with. How many people were on stage with you?
Oh, there were about 25 musicians. We had musicians from France, from Switzerland, from India, from Vietnam, Ghana, South Africa, USA, Canada,
wow.
So Peru. It was quite a huge ensemble of musicians.
How do you arrange to get everyone from all over the world over there to Geneva? Does everyone have to kind of book their own things, or how do you coordinate that?
We've got a team that coordinates, so to make things easier for all the artists, so that the artists can, you know, concentrate more on the music rather than anything else. We've got a wonderful, wonderful logistics team for that, and of course, I meet these wonderful musicians, while I'm traveling, and you know, and performing all over the world. So I end up meeting a lot of wonderful musicians backstage, or sometimes I even meet these musicians if I watch an interesting video on YouTube, and you know, and I just leave a comment over there, and I ask people to figure out a way for me to get in touch with them. So that's how I meet them, and that's how we end up performing with each other.
Well, and I have to commend you, because I know you are very active in your music work, and also you work with you've done a lot of film soundtracks. You do a lot of production. You've done big productions, but you really have dedicated the last few years to almost totally concentrating on the environment. And this last one, if I remember correctly, in Geneva, was about talking about the problem with air quality around the world. Is that right?
Yes, correct. So that particular concert was called the Breathe Life Concert, which we did. And it was a 1.5-hour performance by us. And so basically, it was talking about the urgent situation of air pollution and air quality all over the world. And it's a really, really difficult situation, because it's mainly affecting children. Mm-hmm. And 9 out of 10 children in the world are breathing clean air. There are, in fact, 600,000 children that are dying every single year from breathing polluted air. So it's a very, very difficult situation, and it's a very urgent situation which requires urgent solutions. And we were hoping to spread the message through the language of music. And that's what we're doing, not just with the concert in Geneva, but with many, many concerts, actually.
Well, I know, I mean, I went to Beijing, you know, many years ago, but now when I see pictures of what the air quality is like in Beijing, I really think, gosh, I don't know if I want to go there, because the air there is so polluted. And I think there's some cities in India that you have this problem with as well, right?
True. Cities all over the world have got this problem. And of course, there are cities in India which are extremely polluted. In fact, they've got air pollution levels of 7 to 15 times the WHO guidelines. It's a really bad situation. Of course, China has been doing some wonderful work when it comes to cleaning their air. India too has been taking amazing steps right now, and it will take a while, but I think things will get better. But the main point that I'd like to make over here is that a lot of people are concentrating on big cities, but actually air pollution, when it comes to affecting children and women, are actually very, 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 very predominant in rural areas, because in rural areas, what's happening is that women and children are not using the right cooking fuels. And because of this, there is a lot of domestic air pollution, that is indoor air pollution.
Wow,
because women are using coal and firewood to actually cook their food. And because of this, there's a lot of pollution within the house, which is causing a lot of respiratory problems for children and women. And this is causing a lot of premature deaths when it comes to children. So that's why we need to encourage people in rural areas to use more cleaner fuels for cooking, because the very fact that they're cooking food for sustenance is actually the same reason what is causing them to a lot of respiratory problems.
I wasn't aware that it was that bad around the world. And you know, here we are.
Yes.
I guess it's a matter of education. Now, you've been working with some of the key environmental people I know in India to try to solve this problem, right?
Yes. We've been working closely with the WHO, with the United Nations Environment, and a lot of NGOs all over the world, including we've also been working with the World Bank. So we've been trying to find multiple partners into finding a solution, because, as you know, in today's world, the only way to solve a problem is an interdisciplinary and a multidisciplinary approach. And we have to get a lot of people together to and a lot of great minds together to figure out, you know, how to combat these urgent problems.
So it's not only educating the people, it's also educating world leaders, correct?
Yes, actually educating world leaders, but most world leaders actually are aware of the problem, inspiring them into urgent action that is required, because the issue with democracy, even though democracy is the best form of governance, the biggest issue is that world leaders end up taking an election their entire life, because every 4 years they need to, every 4 to 5 years, so that they get re-elected, and they are following policies that show very visible results, number one. Number two is that policies which show short-term gratification to their constituencies. So whereas when it comes to air pollution, when it comes to the environment, it's very long-term results. And you know, and many times politicians do not want long-term results or do not care about long-term results, because it's long-term results is not going to get them re-elected.
Wow, that's kind of scary. You know, it's funny because I live here, of course, on Maui, and the Big Island had the volcano going off, and it was a huge problem with the air quality over there, and it was a hard situation. Of course, there's the terrible fires in California, and you know, the fire workers, all the firefighters and the personnel had to be subject. I feel for the firefighters who have to be breathing in that air, you know. But then we think of what you're saying. The rural people are doing this all the time when they don't realize that they may be cooking with wood and coal and subject to it all the time. So there really is a lot of education. I also want to commend you. You're a real leader. That's part of the United Nations, and you're considered one of the 100 real leaders who inspire the future, along with greats like Bill Gates and Leonardo DiCaprio and Angelina Jolie. And there's so much to focus on. I know you also did a lot of work and about the problem with the rising water in the oceans. I saw a great picture you posted, which was very scary, of you on an island that was almost completely, just had like, I think, an inch or two left. The rest of the island was underwater. Now, this is a huge problem as well. And this is a bigger problem that's a little harder maybe even to solve, isn't it?
Yeah, true, because the biggest problem when it comes to island nations going underwater due to climate change is that the people who are the worst affected are people who are not at fault at all. Especially, like, you know, as you know, I mean, being from Hawaii, that, you know, the South Pacific Island nations are the worst affected because they are very low-lying islands, and they are in the Pacific Ocean, which is one of the worst affected oceans when it comes to rising ocean levels. And these people of Kiribati, these people of Solomon Islands, of Nauru, all these neighboring islands, they basically, I mean, are not at fault at all when it comes to climate change, because they are environmentally conscious. They don't have much of carbon emissions. They don't have too much of industrialization. But since they're low-lying islands, they are the first to go completely underwater due to climate change because of the as the consequences of our actions of developing nations and developed nations. So that's a little disheartening that these countries are going to be no more for no fault of their own, and they are suffering the consequences of our actions.
Well, as a real leader, as someone who's aware of this, as someone who has traveled extensively to try to see these things, it's got to be very frustrating for you when you see people who are saying that climate change isn't a real thing, that, you know, that don't believe in climate change when you're there and you're seeing it, you know, and there's scientific proof, of course. And I mean, at times it's got to be very frustrating because you're going, we're at the tipping edge, you know, we're at the point where some of these environmental situations have to get fixed yesterday, right? Not even today, but yesterday to try to balance them out. So how do you keep yourself inspired to try to keep getting the word out and try to help change the world?
I would say that when it comes to climate change, of course, it's a very urgent situation, and it requires a very concentrated international and global effort to actually solve this problem, because climate change does not know any boundaries. It does not know any borders. Just as I mentioned, you know, countries like Kiribati are going underwater due to our actions. So what we do in India, what we do in America, what we do in Europe is actually sinking these islands. But at the same time, I do not for a second believe that there is any politician in the world that does not believe that climate change is not real, I do not believe that any politician believes that climate change is not real, or I do not believe that any politician believes that climate change is not man-made. It's just poor political will, in mm-hmm. my opinion. And also, sometimes for politicians, it's very inconvenient to actually say that climate change is real. Mm-hmm. Because saying that climate change is real and admitting that climate change is real and man-made means that they have to make strong policy decisions. It means that they have to make strong legislation. And it means that they have to do a whole lot of things that would probably not get them re-elected. So that is the reason why they are forced within their own capacity to say that they do not believe in climate change. But I do not believe anybody in the right mind will ever make a statement that they truly do not believe in climate change, because it is so obvious that it is real and it's so obvious that it is happening right now. But it's just that, you know, that politics would not allow them to admit to it.
Good point. You know, I have a friend who does a lot of films in India and has gone to Kathmandu and was there just recently, was impressed on the work being done on one of the most important rivers, which you did a great video on, in Shanta. I think it was Shanti Samsara that you did the video. Which one did you do the video of, the Indian river, that the Ganges? And I heard that they're actually starting to purify and do some work on the Ganges, and he was excited that he saw a section of it that had been completely purified.
No, true. So the Ganga River is one of the most important rivers in the world, because it nourishes the lives of more than one-tenth of the world's population. Now, that's because India itself has a large population, but nevertheless, the Ganga nourishes the lives of more than 450 million people,
wow,
which is pretty much the population of the whole of America.
Wow.
And so this particular river is facing a lot of problems because of industrialization, because of unnatural flow, because of dams, and various other reasons. And right now, our government is putting in a massive, massive effort to purify this particular river, not just because it nourishes the lives of that many people, but also the Ganga is a symbol of spirituality, of devotion, and of Hinduism in India. So that is why it really needs to be purified. And so that's the river which I made a song on, and to create awareness and to get everybody to have a renewed love for this river, so that through that love, people will learn how to conserve and protect this beautiful river.
Well, I have to say you inspire me very much, Ricky, because, you know, I did a new CD, and thank you for helping to contribute a couple of musical pieces for my new piece CD. But music is very important, but you've taken it to the next level, where it's not just music, but you actively go around the world playing and gathering these musicians and do concerts that people who are normally wouldn't hear this music, they come out and they understand it. Plus, you can share your inspiration and education at these concerts, right?
thank you so much for that. And it's always been a pleasure to collaborate with you. I think this is our third or fourth collaboration. But nevertheless, when it comes to these concerts, I love bringing musicians from different parts of the world together simply, you know, to show people that, you know, that number one, music is such a powerful language, and to use that language of music. And number two, to show that, you know, how different people from different parts of the world with seemingly different cultures can come together so beautifully in harmony. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not like these musicians are playing different songs and completely different pieces. Everybody is collaborating together on the same piece, and everybody is bringing in a little bit of their culture into that piece. So, mm-hmm. So when you're disseminating a powerful message on climate change or on species extinction or on air pollution, in this kind of a format with multiple musicians from different parts of the world, each bringing in their own culture, it is a very powerful message of the world coming together to showcase that, you know, that this is not a statement that just one country is making. This is a statement that the world is making through the language of music.
I know you work with Wouter Kellerman and did work in South Africa and got to play and work with him in quite a few concerts, I believe. Can you just review some of the events that you've done over this last year, some of the experiences you've had with some of the different concerts and world leaders?
Yeah, we'd love to. This year has been quite a few concerts. I think this year I've done, about 35-40 concerts the whole year.
Wow.
And some of them are, we played in Canada to about 15,000 people. We also played to the members of the House of Commons, that is the Members of Parliament of Canada. Then we also played at the United Nations General Assembly in New York. We played at the United Nations headquarters in Geneva. Then the concert in Geneva was to presidents and prime ministers and to all the leaders of various United Nations organizations. Then we also played in the Indian Parliament House, that is the Vidhan Sabha. We did a concert in France, we did a concert in London, we did a concert in Thailand. So multiple concerts in India.
Wow.
We also performed at the World Environment Day celebrations, the Global World Environment Day celebrations, then for the United Nations Environment. And just last night, we performed for UNICEF. We performed to about 6,000 or 7,000 people in Bangalore for UNICEF and for the World Children's Day. And for that, at that concert, I was announced as being a celebrity endorser for UNICEF. So that's basically been this year. We still have a couple of more concerts to go in December.
Well, and I have to say, you've just embraced this mantle and taken it on. Plus, I didn't even mention your work with the elephants and saving the elephants. I know that's another one of your huge causes you do. But, I mean, what you did, and it was very interesting because I know you're so invested with some of the wonderful musicians you work with who have good intentions. But you haven't put out a CD since you're in a couple of years, so you literally are doing it in concerts and reaching out rather than doing the CD. I have to ask you, do you have plans to do another CD coming out again soon?
Yeah, so after Shanti Samsara, which released in the end of 2015, the way that I've treated Shanti Samsara is not much of an album, but I've treated it more like a compilation of songs. And what I've been doing right now is that I've been adding to that compilation. So since Shanti Samsara, I've come up with more than about 16 or 17 new songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been putting them out on my website and giving it out as a free download,
yes.
Not been selling those albums,
uh-huh.
selling those tracks. And of course, people can listen to those pieces of music on YouTube, or they can listen to it at my concerts. But yeah, very soon I will formalize that, and I will gather up all those additional songs that I've created for Shanti Samsara, and you know, I'll put them out as a volume 2 or something like that, which I will do pretty soon.
And your website is Ricky Kej, Ricky, R-I-C-K-Y-K-E-J .com?
Exactly. So it's R-I-C-K-Y-K-E-J.com, and all my music is available over there for free.
And some wonderful, wonderful downloads and beautiful videos that you've done. You did that one on the Ganges River that was fabulous. It was just so lovely. You actually felt you trace it from its very roots all the way down to the ocean. And it's just really a beautiful, beautiful piece. And I have to ask you, because you travel a lot, what airlines do you like and what airlines don't you like? Or what's your favorite airline to fly on?
So for me, I don't have the luxury of sticking around with one airline simply because the way that my wife and I book our tickets and the way our logistics team books our tickets is we just look for the cheapest airline for that particular sector and we go ahead and book it. So that was, I've traveled pretty much every single airline on earth. And obviously, there are some airlines which are better than the others, like the Middle Eastern airlines, that is Qatar Airlines, Abu Dhabi Airlines, Etihad and Emirates are really good airlines. And some of the European ones like Finnair are extremely good. So, of course, I'm always happy when I fly one of these planes, but I don't have the luxury of preference for an airline. Whichever is the cheapest ticket for whichever sector, that's the one which I travel on.
I would have thought after all these trips that maybe you get a whole bunch of free bonus extra miles from all the miles you travel. But I guess, like you say, I don't think United has much of a presence in India, and some of these airlines might not. Which is what airline has the biggest presence in India?
We've got a couple of. We've got Air India, which has got a huge presence in India, and the Middle Eastern airlines have a huge presence in India.
Oh, they
so
do.
British Airways and Lufthansa. Uh-huh. But the thing is that, again, like, you know, the amount of traveling that I'm doing in multiple sectors, many times the same airline does not service all those different sectors.
Uh-huh.
So that is why I've never been able to accumulate any miles because of this. Because accumulating miles is always good with people who are flying the same international sectors multiple times.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Because it can be very long flights. I know you've gone back and forth from India to America many times in this last year. And that's a long flight. How long is it from Bangalore to New York?
Yeah, so the fastest you can get to New York is about 19 hours. But usually an economical flight will take you maybe about 22 or 23 hours along with the layover.
Wow.
But I've done flights to New York where I flew in the morning and I finished off a concert in the evening and I flew out late night back to Bangalore.
Oh,
so
no.
Actually, my stay in New York has been like half the duration of the actual flight, one-way flight.
Whoa, that's pretty hard on the body and the mind. I was like, what time zone
it
am
is,
I really is. In? I don't. And maybe you don't even have time for jet lag at that point. It's just like, wow.
No, not at all. No time for jet lag because anyway, my sleep timings are so erratic that, you know, that I do not suffer from jet lag just because of that. But of course, sooner or later, my body's going to catch up with all those issues and, you know, and I'm going to have to realize that I'm going to have proper sleep timings and I'm going to have to be a little more disciplined.
Now, Bangalore has really gone through major changes in the last 4 years or 5 years. The tech sector's really brought in more money there, hasn't it?
True. Actually, for the last 15 years, Bangalore has gone through a tremendous amount of changes. In fact, even environmentally, Bangalore has been suffering a lot because of the amount of business that Bangalore has been bringing in. For example, Bangalore used to have almost 1,000 lakes. This was like right up to about 25 years ago. And right now, we're left with just about 30 or 40 lakes.
Really?
Because there's so much of illegal construction happening on these lake beds. And water bodies are being absolutely destroyed and polluted and, you know, and you have these situations in Bangalore where you have a single lane road going in for about a mile. And at the end of the mile, you'll see like a tech park, which has got like 100,000 employees.
My gosh.
That's the kind of infrastructure that we have in Bangalore. It's really, really terrible. And our air quality also is about, sometimes it's 2 to 3 times the permissible limits of particulate matter. So it's a very, very bad situation that we are in. Our groundwater, apparently, the Indian Institute of Science has said that our groundwater is going to be completely finished by 2024, and we're not going to have any water in Bangalore. So
time for you to move, Ricky. You might have to move to America.
No, not just me. It's going to be time for everybody in Bangalore to move out because of this. So basically, to answer your question, Bangalore has seen a huge IT boom.
Wow.
But at the same time, you know, it's come with a massive price.
I guess. I wasn't aware it was that bad. My gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you do amazing work, and I really couldn't list all the great things you've done. And I know you're one of those people that are really looking for the good of the world and the good of all. And, you know, we have Thanksgiving here in America. In the last statement, I just ask, what would you be thankful for?
I would be thankful for music mainly, because for two things actually. One would be music, and simply because, you know, music has made me whatever I am, and also music has given me one of the greatest lives that I could ever ask for, in terms of, like, you know, because I would consider myself successful only if I'm able to do music till the day I die, because that's because every breath of me is basically music. And wow. The second thing that I would be grateful for is the relationships that I have, like, you know, my wife,
yes,
and my family, the friends, the musicians that I work with, my collaborators. I would say that I'm extremely grateful for that, because I'm only as good as the people who I collaborate with, and I've been always blessed with amazing collaborations, so that I can come up with beautiful music that that is true to my vision.
Well, I'm grateful for you, and I'm going to let you go now, because you probably can get some more sleep there in India. But thank you for calling in, and have a blessed day, and good luck with all the work you're doing for the environment, Ricky.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really grateful to be on your show.
A big aloha to you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. And